Oh, great grill right on the set. I projected. I was just finishing davening when you called. I just Good morning. There's a lot of interesting questions that you have to get from Vayeshev. We spoke Vayeshev already, Miketz, but it's really four parshas that go all together. Obviously, it's the parsha breaks are almost non-existent. Of course, it's one long thought. Actually, it goes all the way back to when Yaakov. At this point in time, I think part of the significance of Ayichi Yaakov, Be'eretz Mitzrayim, is that it also tells us that he was Miyushev Das. It's the end, Vayeshev Yaakov, Be'eretz Mitzrayim, Shvav Yisrei Shana. I'm just talking as, I'm thinking as I speak. Vayeshev Yaakov, Be'eretz Mitzrayim, Vayeshev Yaakov, Parshas Vayeshev. Be'eretz Megurei Aviv. So he was looking Bikesh Yaakov Leishev B'Sheket V'Shalva, and of course, big, you know, Kavtzu Alav Rugzol Shel Yosef. And now it says Ben Shvasrei Shana. So we darshan the 17 years at this point, the 17 years at the end. But it's to tell us also now Vayichi Yaakov Be'eretz Mitzrayim Shvasrei Shana. It's the same thing over here. Of course, it tells us the 17. But the 17 years that Yaakov was looking for at that time, he when he came back from being away for 20, from being away from his parents for 22 years, so now he looked to relax. So now he had the opportunity to relax. The problem becomes, as is pointed out by various mefarshim, by Chi Yaakov Be'eretz Mitzrayim Shvayesrei Shana. And what does that lead us to right away? The first moral lesson is here. We get comfortable in Chutz La'aretz, obviously. So, Vayichi Yaakov Be'eretz Mitzrayim Shvayesrei Shana. And where does that, what?
Not in Mitzrayim.
Yaakov in Mitzrayim.
I mean now.
Yeah, sure, this parsha. He lived, so now he had a chance to relax. And now he was being cared for. His children were taking care of him. And that's it. And that's, as I mentioned once before, that's always the problem that you have to have. There's an interesting from the Divrei Yoel on Pirkei Avos that he says that no matter how from you are, there are people that say, you know, I brought up a lot of children and this was my life. What could I do? I tried my best with my kids. They're not as from as I am, but okay, listen, what he said, if you want to finish your life as frum as you are, you better make sure that you work hard until they do become as frum as you, because your children walk you the last mile, basically. I mean, not everybody, but basically at some point in time, you're at the behest of, you know, your children are walking you and they're telling you this is what you're going to do and this is what you're going to do. If you have to move in with them and they don't live so close across the street from the shul and you can't make it otherwise because you did. And, you know, I remember my father giving me tochacha when I moved to my house, and for the 4 years that I lived in 901 Avenue H, when I got married, I lived across the street from the shul. And I was getting up 5 o'clock every morning. At 5:30 in the morning, I went to Daf Yomi. And 6:30 was davening. And when I moved, my father said, very nice house. This is it. It's very nice. But tell me what's going to be now. What is your life going to be like at this point in time? You were going to Daf Yomi. So actually, I started to get up earlier and go to Daf Yomi over there. I had to drive all the way back to 9th Street. I mean, I assume Aaron Drillick is still giving it already for how many cycles, I don't even begin to know, because he started then and it was already like, this is a really tremendous man. He worked for the Federal Reserve and then he retired. Aaron Drillick, he moved to Borough Park eventually, but he davened with us in Shul. Phenomenal Bakari also. But really an unbelievable guy. He taught in Torah V'Das. After he worked the Federal Reserve, he taught math in Torah V'Das in the afternoon. later on. But nevertheless, you know, he used to get up and prepare the daf. He got up at 4 o'clock in the morning, he said, to prepare. So he's been through, the last I spoke to him, he's been through six times already, you know, six, seven cycles dealing with daf yomi. He's a couple of years older than me. I assume he's still doing it. Incredible that it takes that much, you know. But it's very difficult. But the point is over here, what we get to the point is that Yaakov, when he had the dream of the Sulam, and as I mentioned before, the one very important thing where Yaakov makes all his decisions from, and Yosef is on the same page with Yaakov in some way. Rabbi Alper point out that when you're in Golos, when you're in Eretz Yisrael, who's having the dream? Yaakov had the dreams, Yosef had the dreams, Avram had the dream, and so on and so forth. It doesn't say anywhere that we see that Yitzhak had a dream, but Yitzhak didn't need any dreams. After the Akedah, he was a complete person, certainly. There was no need for any dreams. God came to him. I guess any time that God spoke to him, we make it seem like it's not a dream, but we always have to remember, as the Rambam points out a couple of times, especially at the beginning of Vayera, where he does point it out, that we shouldn't think, God forbid, that it was like when it says, Vayomer Hashem al Avram, or Yitzhak, or Yaakov, that it was Baspa Klaria Hameira. It was for them to interpret the dream, a vision. It was not behukits. It wasn't while they were all awake. And now Yaakov sees that dream and he realizes the misinterpretation that he had of the dream. And we've mentioned this before. But what gave him the wherewithal now suddenly to have that thought process that he really to see clearly? As we said before, as I mentioned with Vayeshev, Yaakov made the mistake of when he saw the beged, and I mentioned this a few weeks ago, I think, when he saw the beged in the dream, that Yosef was having trouble with the beged, and Vayimo'en lehisnachem, and he, Ashes Potiphar, had grabbed the whole Vayazov, Bigdo, Biyadov, Vayonos, Vayetze, Achutza, he saw the wrong beged. The brothers brought him a dream. Actually, they sent a messenger to him. They didn't bring the beged back to him personally. They wouldn't do that. That would look too suspicious. So they sent a messenger. Vayovi, well, you know, they sent it. If you read the words, that's the parts of speech, that they sent a messenger with the beged, and they said, Hakerna haksonis bin chahiimlo. The brothers wouldn't say, is this the beged of your son? Unless they felt so disenfranchised that they called it. And it's not unlikely to say that, because we see in last week's parsha, what does Yehuda say? It just shows you how Reuven, Shimon, Levi, and Yehuda's and the other brothers felt so disenfranchised. When Yehuda is begging for Yosef, he says, Ki shnayim yolda li ishti. I mean, he's saying, you know, I had a brother and he was killed. And now he has that brother, Binyamin, he's left, he's an only child. What do you mean he's an only child? He's not an only child. There's Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zevulun, so on and so forth. All these children are around. How come? Why is he saying that? They felt so disenfranchised that it was pathetic. But Yaakov is now surveying the situation, and he sees at this point in time that he's more relaxed. And we said before that Yaakov realized he made the mistake in the dream, because we say that Nevuah is only shruya mitoch simcha. And when he thought, when they brought him the beged, vayimo'en lehisnachem, he thought it was a different beged. He thought it was the Yosef's beged. They're showing him a beged, and he's not seeing clearly. And he sees a beged that Yosef is having a problem with. And obviously, the beged that he's seeing is vayonos vayetze achuzah, vayazov bigdo biyado, vayonos vayetze achuzah. He sees that beged, and it's a big mistake. All right, very good. But now, Vayechi Yaakov b'Eretz Mitzrayim, Shabbos Reishono, he's now Miyushev Das. He's relaxed. He sees things. He looks over his life. He's had time to process all the events of his life. And he is now Miyushav Das. And he starts to think about all the events of his life. Which is a very interesting thing, because a lot of the Mefarshim are on Yosef's case in last week's Parsha, and on Yaakov's case in this week's Parsha. And what do I mean by that? Yosef knows that the problem that he had for that caused him so much grief was, even though this wasn't the only thing, but it was the focal point and it was the straw that broke the camel's back, was the Ksonas Pasim. And when now his brothers come down to Mitzrayim and he finally, so to speak, lets the cat out of the bag and says, Ani Yosef Achichem, Asher Mechartem Osi Mitzrayimo, and don't worry about it, Ki L'michyo Shlochani Hashem Lifnechem. Okay, it's a big shock. But he gives L'chulam Nosan Lo'ish Chalifos Smolos, he gave them all new clothing, Ulevinyamin Nosan Chamesh Chalifos Smolos, and he gave Binyamin five new sets of clothes. So is he setting the wheels in motion once again? Is he setting the seeds of jealousy once again? Is this how it's going to play out? Or for whatever reason? I read one that Ebesha said that one answer said that Binyamin's clothing was not really worth that much. He gave the brothers a suit from Armani, so to speak, and he gave the others had five sets of clothing from S. Klein on the square. So, and that's why, and so why did he take five particular? This might be a Vilna Gaon. It could be. What was the symbolism of five dafka, five sets of clothes? Because he says he saw the future of Binyamin, who comes from Binyamin is Mordechai. Mordechai yotzah milvnei amelech bevush malchus tcheles vachur v'ateres zahov gedolah v'sachris butz v'argamon, is five sets of clothing, and this is symbolism there. And okay, you know, to take it whatever, however you want to do it. By the way, one other thing that I didn't mention I don't think I had a chance to mention if I did or not. I said it to a couple of people on the side that in Miketz, the end of Parshas Miketz, it's the only Parsha that mentions that there are how many words are in the Parsha, or how many letters, or how many words. It says 2,025 Tevos in the Parsha. It gives two different reasons. And one, but it says Potifera, is that you should know that it's two words, that it has to be written as two words. The reason that always resonated with me, because when I was a teenager and we were laying in somebody's house who was sick, that's exactly what happened. And a friend of mine, who I reminded him recently, a couple of years ago, I should say, that that's what happened by this person's house. And that we told him to lay with one eye open only, and the Sefer Torah had it incorrectly. And he was yelling, and they told him just to keep going and shut up. And that's it. But they said, what do you want us to do? But I warned him about it. But nevertheless, it's one of those things that happened. But now Yaakov sees clearly, and Yosef sees clearly. And what makes somebody do what he knows better than not to do? He knows at this point in time that the Ksonas Pasim starts it. So why would he even give it, even though it shouldn't have mattered? But he does it anyhow, and he gives Binyamin five sets of clothing. But the fact is, the end result of the story is, did it work out? Yosef understands ki l'michyo shalchani Hashem lifnechem. He knows, as I said so many times over the last few years, that Yosef was the only person, and maybe to a degree now Yaakov at this point, but we're not 100% sure what Yaakov knew and when he knew it, if he did. Yosef knew why every event in his life took place. He understood cause and effect for everything that happened. And that's basically what Rabbi Alpert says, not in his, he doesn't say this, but he says it in Parshas B'Shalach, when we get to Vayar Yisrael Es HaYorah Gdola, as we get to in a few weeks, when it says you have the Yorach Hazaka, you have Chozek Yod, and you had Yorach Dola. What's the difference between all of them? And he says the Yorach Dola is the big picture. That's what you see. All of a sudden you understand the events that led up to what's happening now. Of course, what led up to what's happening now is that God wanted the whole story to play out, that he told them for 3 days. It was just, Vayugad l'melech Mitzrayim ki barach ha'om, was just a whole scenario laid out by God that says we want to go out in the Midbar for 3 days. The whole scenario was laid out, the whole story was just so Paro would have a reason to chase the Bnei Israel to the Yam Suf, because we know that God put in the motions from when he created the world that the Yam Suf would split in the on Yud Nisan, on Chaf Aleph Nisan in the year 2448. And that was going to happen. And this is why. So we had to play out in that respect that they all had to get there. So Vayayishel is Yeridola. Now we see why we had to get to the Yam Suf and why this all happened. When they saw Sus Marokbo, Rama Vayom. Yosef understood that all the events of the last 22 years, obviously, after he interprets the dreams from the Sara Mashke, the Sara Ofer, as I mentioned, and various things happen, and he sees that he's alive, and that they are going to Golos. And Yaakov doesn't know this until God comes to him on the way, and Yaakov is still thinking that when he sets out to go visit, that he's still going for a visit. That's all he's going for, is to take a little time off. And now he's coming to visit, and he'll go back home. Oh, great. But God comes to him on his way and says, V'yosef yoshis yodo alinecho, this is where you're going to live the rest of your life. Although it doesn't answer the question, if this happened on his way, did he pack up everything and go? Or did he send for it and he had everything shipped? He called Mayflower Storage and moving and say to bring my stuff with me. Maybe they didn't have that much, or they, whatever it is. It wasn't as if they had the brick homes to sell. He didn't have to put it on the market. So whatever it is, it's not a major question. But nevertheless, he knew he was coming for a while, certainly. I guess he suspected. But the fact is, now that he's Yosef sees that everything worked out, that all the things that were happening, the Ksonas Pasim was meant to be. So it's not that Yaakov made a mistake. The same thing happens to Yaakov in this week's Parsha, when Yaakov says that he gives him Vayomim Mi'ela, and he puts, and Yosef, he sees, Tzikeles Yodov, Ki Menasheh HaBachor, very good. And he says, and why is Yosef saying this? He says, because look what you did, you messed up, look what you caused with the children, and now you're starting up with my children, why do it? But Yaakov is the same thing, Vayechi Yaakov Bi'eretz Mitzrayim, Shvayes Reishonoh, he's Miyushiv Das. And he understands now too that even though the Ksonas Pasim was maybe seemingly on his part a mistake, but nevertheless, was it really? Because God had all of these events in his mind planned. The end result was he realized not just that he saw the future, but that he saw now that the events that he did, all the mistakes, the dreams, Vayigar Bo Aviv, all these events that took place were meant to be. And that God had his plan, that otherwise he would have been taken down in chains to Mitzrayim. And this affected the scenario where he was able to come down and live for 17 years. And that's why Vayechi Yaakov Bi'eretz Mitzrayim, he appreciated the thought process that went on behind it. But nevertheless, the problem becomes, Vayechi Yaakov Bi'eretz Mitzrayim, you can't ever lose sight that you're in Golos. And that's the lesson. And so what is the next pasuk? God says, you're enjoying yourself, I understand. Relax. But don't Vayechi Yaakov Bi'eretz Mitzrayim. You know, don't overdo it. And therefore, vayikrivu yemei Yisrael lomus. If you are feeling so good, and if you are really saying, you know, Mitzrayim is a wonderful place, I could really enjoy myself, I could see, you know, Yehuda, yes, Yehuda, sholach kazos lefanov goshna, great. And we say he set up yeshivas, whatever it means, whatever it is, or he set up a place to see that there was a place where they could study or whatever it means, but, and he established places where the family could live in comfort. But vayikrivu yemei Yisrael lomus. And now this is brings up another point. I mentioned a couple of times previously, and it holds out the more I encounter the difference in usage of Yaakov's name. And it really seems to work very well. Because it, in this parasha, it happens at least twice. And we had it in Navi, and it seemed to work out a couple of times. It says, Vayichi Yaakov bi'eretz Mitzrayim, Shvah Esrei Shana. Vayikrivu Yemei Yisrael Lomus. And what do we say? That the parsha is at the end of Vayigash, there's no space between Vayigash and Vayichi. And therefore, Nistamu Einayim Shel Yisrael. What does it mean, Nistamu Einayim Shel Yisrael, we say? Vayikrivu Yemei Yisrael Lomus. It doesn't mean Yaakov anymore necessarily. It means Vayichi Yaakov be Eretz Mitzrayim, Shavah Esrei Shana. Because Yaakov enjoyed it, that mental state that he passes on to his children, they feel it, that they're enjoying life here and they're living well. Then Vayikrivu Yemei Yisrael Lomus. This was the beginning of the end, not just for Yaakov, but for Klal Yisrael. And that is the moral lesson from the beginning of the parasha. Vayikrivu Yemei Yisrael Lomus. Vayikra Livno Liose. But he begins to see that, and he realizes that, I don't know, I'm feeling good, but my children are enjoying it even more than I am. So Vayikra Livno Liosef. So who? What does he do now? He calls Yosef. Of course, why does he call Yosef in particular? Well, Yosef, he knows what he wants to say. He knows that Yosef is the only one who has the ability to be able to, I mean, the other sons, if he says, bury me in Eretz Yisrael, take me back to Ramah Samachpelah, they don't have the ability to keep the promise. But Yosef, being the vice president in Egypt, has the ability to affect some sort of, he has the power to affect it. And of course he makes him swear. But he says also, there are things that he's telling Yosef that Yosef witnessed as well. But of course children don't process information the same way as adults do. I mean, I'm sure we all remember events in our life and we wonder why our parents did certain things. But nevertheless, when we grew up and then we began to understand, you know, we either criticized the parent for doing something. And then, you know, how many times did your parents say to you, you'll understand later. When you're older, you'll understand. When you have children, you'll understand. And that's what happens so many times in life to everybody. And so he's recounting things to Yosef. Why is he telling things to Yosef? Because he knows... he wants to put things in perspective. And he knows he's filling Yosef in on various events that happened. You were away for 22 years. The other brothers I don't have to talk to. They lived it with me. But you missed 22 years of family history. But what's very interesting over here is something else. He's talking to Yosef and he wants to tell him all these things. And of course, as we know, Vayishchazek Yisrael, Vayesha, Vayishtachu Yisrael Arosh HaMitah was also, as some of the Mefarshim tell us, that this was the final part of the dream. Did Yaakov actually do this or what to make the dream come true? Or did he do it just as, because he just felt he should do it at this point in time, and it just happened to be that that's the way it worked out? But nevertheless, he calls Yosef here, and hinei avicha cholet. So he comes and he goes. So what does he go to tell him? Yeah, very good. You're sick. And he wants to be mevaka cholet. And Yaakov thinks that now he's going to tell him, Esa sher yikro eschem biachris hayomim. All right. Excuse me one second. I just want to shut this off. My shul is calling me. I'm just going to hang up. Yeah. I don't know why. Whatever. Anyhow, so what happens now? I lost my thought for a second. But nevertheless, what is he doing over here? At this point in time, he goes ahead and, yeah. No, I'm not going to answer.
No, keep on going. No,
they know I'm busy till 12 o'clock.
No, keep on going.
All right, I'm just trying to collect my thoughts. Okay. All right. Anyhow, so he goes in and he explains to Yosef, I need you to fulfill my wishes. The other brothers can't do it. But he says, Vayikro eschem esa sheyikro eschem biachris hayomim. What does he want to tell him? And now he understands the mistake that he made in the dream. We've said this in the past years. And he realized the sulam was, he thought it meant don't push the envelope, don't climb the ladders. The malachim that are going up, everybody ends up coming down. I shouldn't go up the ladder. And now he realizes that God wanted me to climb that ladder, that everybody else would get knocked down, but not you. But the fact is, and he wants to impart that information. But the reality is, it's not so much that God takes away the nevuah from him. It's maybe he realizes himself. Rabbi Alpert makes a point of saying he wasn't necessarily going to tell them when Mashiach was. He just wants them to understand that there are mistakes that you make, and therefore tell them how he now sees how God works. In other words, it's like after the Egel, when Moshe is pleading for God, for Klal Yisrael's survival, and he says, tell me, I need to know how things were explained to me. You know, how the God says, you can't handle it, you can't know. Yaakov sees things with a much clearer vision and wants to tell them the events of history, and he's giving that in the brachas that he gives. Rashi explains, you know, this was, he saw, you know, Don Yodin Amo, and he's seeing Shimshon, and he's all these things, references that he sees, and he wants to tell them the future, what's going to happen to Klal Yisrael. Well, that's good, but then he says, one thing that I mentioned again previously, the word Yikra, again, is spelled with an aleph, and the word Yikra, as we know in Kiseitse, obviously spelled with a hey at the end, not an aleph, Esa Sheyikra Eschem, but the interesting thing, it's not only here, it's also Ki Kore Kan Tzipor is also with an aleph and not a hey, and it means something else. So, of course, there has to be a message there. Of course, Rabbi Schwab mentions in there that Yikra Eschem, from here we learn is that Kol Omer Davav Shem Omer Mevi Gula. And what he wants, Yaakov is trying to say, is that if you want to bring about the Gula Shalema, you want to bring about the Gula, you have to maintain a tradition. As I said, you're going to have to move on from generation to generation. He wants to tell Yosef that if you're the leader, you're going to have to make Bnei Yisrael understand that they should not assimilate. You understand what assimilation causes. You worked very hard. I watched you for 17 years, and I took hold of Ephraim. As we see at the end of the parsha, it says, Gam Bnei Mochir ben Menashe, Ephraim and Menashe were brought up in that way, and Ephraim was brought up by Yaakov. Menashe was brought up by Yosef, but as the Torah tells us at the end of the parasha, Vayayi Yosef le'Ephraim b'nei Shilei Shim, gam b'nei Mochir ben Menashe, you'll do al berkei Yosef. What does that mean? Because Menashe also had the love of Eretz Yisrael, and where do we see that? In Parshas Pinchas in Matos Maaseh. When it says, Vayakrev Moshe's Mishpaton by Benos Salafchot, what was that all about? How come Vayitigravna Benos Lohod, Ben Chayfe, Ben Gilad, Ben Mochir, Ben Menashe, Le Mishpachos, Menashe, Ben Yosef? Why go through all of that? Who cares? But we see in the parasha following in Matos when they split up that Reuven got and Chatzi Shevet Menashe. So we want to say Benos Slavchot understood that they were bnei, and they were bnei Mochir ben Menashe Yuldu al Berkei Yosef. Yosef understood that this is what the chiba of Eretz Yisrael was so important for them. Great. That's a wonderful thing, and that he saw, he knew how Yosef brought up his children properly, and I want you to impart that love, because I see Vayikrevu Yemei Yisrael Lamus. I see that while I enjoyed it, the mistake that happened now was that feeling passed on to my children, and they got used to living here too. You never had that feeling. You gave your children the name Ephraim. Which brings us to the next part. Why was the bracha given to Ephraim and Menashe so separately in giving them the Shvatim? And why is he giving him V'ekbereh Hashem b'derech Ephraz? He beis lochem. Yosef was alive at that point. Why recount that part of the story? And this is a very interesting thing that I read this week. Every time I think I've read a lot, and you see, you missed little thick snippets from the Abarbanel has a very interesting point here. The reason he mentions at this point, the whole story, he recounts it, that V'ekbereh Hashem b'derech Ephraz, V'o b'derech Ephraz, that mentions the word. He's trying to say to Yosef, not only am I giving the bracha to Ephraim and Menashe, but I'm giving specifically to Ephraim. Because not only before did it say, when God told him, V'Efrasi Oscha B'mod Miod, the similarity to the name Ephraim, but the fact that I buried Rachel, B'derech Ephras, there's a message here. And you didn't know, you knew that, but that had nothing to do, you had children here so many years later, without any knowledge of what's going on in the family, and you named the child Ephraim, this has to be not a coincidence in any way, shape, or form. The Bechorah, whatever you want to say, belongs to Ephraim. You must understand. So he's recounting a story that he already heard. He knew. He was there when his mother passed away. He saw what Yaakov did. But he wants to say it to him that I buried her along the way because, not because I buried her along the way. I buried her along the way, B'derech Ephras. Do you understand, Yosef, where I'm going with this, he says. Do you understand? So you don't understand? Ephraim, you named him Ephraim. It's amazing, isn't it? It's the same root, the same word, the symbolism is frightening. It has to be. There's something to that. You can't just discount it. And the question then rises, so if we take a look at the Pasuk when he gives them the brachas, it really leaves out something that bothered me. And once again, I missed it. And I wondered about it all the time. And I know I mentioned the problem, but I had no answer. Vayomer Yisrael el Yosef, Ofonecha lo filolti, and the Vayosef Osom, Vayikaka Shnehem, it's Ephraim Bimino. And it said before that, Vayomer Yosef el Aviv Bonaihem, and he says, V'yenei Yisrael Kavdu Mizoken. And of course, as I once mentioned before, V'yenei Yisrael Kavdu Mizoken, as opposed to Yitzchak, when it says, V'yenei Yitzchak, it says, Lo Yuchal Liro, Vatecheno Einov Meiros doesn't mean that he was blind because he couldn't see. I saw enough in my life. He saw Esav the way he was. Yaakov Taka was a little weak vision. He got old and he started to get macular degeneration, whatever it is. And he couldn't see very clearly. And of course, he knows that Ephraim and Menashe, he brought him. He doesn't know that these two children are, of course, as Mepharshim want to say, they were dressed in clothing that he didn't recognize. They're very simple. But the point is, who is who? And when he gives them the initial bracha, according to the Pasuk, Yosef does not say anything. When it says, Hamalach HaGoel Osimi Kol Ra, what is Yosef doing? The whole part of Sikel Es Yodov happens after that. Ki Menashe HaBechor. Why didn't he do it before? Yaakov was already had his hands on their head, had already switched his hands and said, Hamalach HaGoel Osimi Kol Ra, Yivarech Es Hanorim. And Yosef didn't say anything. Read the text. And then suddenly, he afterwards, when Yaakov begins to give a bracha once again, Yosef says, Sikel Es Yodov Ki Menashe HaBechor. He said very simply, because initially, when he gives Ephraim and Menashe the bracha, when he says, Hamalach HaGoel Osi Mikol Ra, so Yaakov switches his hands. But does he give a special bracha to Menashe and Ephraim? He gives them the same bracha. He says, Hamalach HaGoel Osi Mikol Ra, Yivarech Es Hanorim. It's a bracha, the same bracha for both. So he thinks whatever he thinks, but all right, nothing happened. He switched his hand, but the reality is he gave them both the same bracha, so there was no harm, no foul. Yeah, go ahead.
According to Ramban, if it was not correctly done, then the Shechina, the Ruch HaKadosh would not rest on the brachas. They would not be recorded. That was Yosef's concern.
Fine. You know, the Avarbanel is not, you know, I'm sure if you wrote him a letter, he would tell you what's wrong with that, because that's what he does. That's why, look at Bereshis over here, 300 pages till you get till the end of Noach here, because he deconstructs everybody else's theories about everything before he gets on to tell you that what he says makes a lot more sense. And grammatically speaking, where he focuses on a lot of times, look at the psukim, look at what they say. It doesn't say what you think it says. I mean, they're nice pshatim. It's very nice. I understand it. And he's very respectful to, you know, certain people. He says they made terrible mistakes. The Ramban and the Rambam, he calls Rebbe Mori, you know, he calls them my Rebbe. He refers to them as his teachers, very respectful. But he says, I think they have a problem. But he says it in that respect. But now he's saying, now he goes ahead and he tells them, okay, listen, I'm giving them different bracha. Now he says, oh, now you're giving Ephraim first shot over here and you're saying something different than Menashe. Now, Sikel Es Yodov Ki Menashe Abchor. Now, if before, it wasn't a problem. But now I have a problem. I don't understand. If you didn't do it before, if you gave them one general bracha, why are you doing it now? And that's when he says, Yodati b'ni yodati, when Yaakov says, I know, gamhui eliyam, I understand. But you didn't understand what I said. You didn't get the message I gave you before, that the name Ephraim struck me over the head so hard that he felt also, as pointed out before, when it said, Vifreisio Scha Bimod Miod in a previous parsha, in I think it's in Vayishlach yet, Hinani Mafrecha Vihirbisicho Nesaticho Legoyim, all the way back then, Yaakov puts everything in perspective. That's part of Vayichi Yaakov Bi'eretz Mitzrayim. He realizes now that he says, if it wasn't for, this is an unbelievable thing that doesn't go with a lot of other nevuahs, seemingly, that we said. But he says the fact that Vayishkav Ruvain Es Pilegesh Yaakov, and he did Bilha, and we doubt it, he didn't have any more children. He says the message was that he realizes now that Ephraim and Menashe, why Kiruvain v'Shimon Yuli? Because Ephraim and Menashe were originally meant to be his children. And what Ruvain did prevented him now from having two more children that he was meant to have. Unbelievable thought, right? That's what he says here. He says it way back there, that his thought process was Ephraim and Manasseh, all of this was telling him that Ephraim was originally meant to be his child. So even though Yosef had those children, so it's Asher Nosan Li Elokim Bozeh, now the reason that I had, and they both understood that, the fact that I had these two children were due to circumstances beyond our control. The originality of the situation was Ephraim and Manasseh are Yaakov's children in the first place. And they were meant to be. All of the symbolism with the word Ephraim really struck him over the head so hard that he said he can't get over that. And that's what he's telling Yosef. You just are not letting it sink in. That is exactly what I mean to tell you. Vayar Yisrael es b'nei Yosef vayomer mi'ela. It's Ephraim and Manasseh. These are my children. Kiruvein v'shimon yehuli. No, but the children you had after that, that's all. I'm not telling you any other children. Should you have more children, it doesn't take effect on them. It's only this part. I don't know if I had, let me just see. I mean, that was my, just a winging thought.
But what about, why Shimon?
Go ahead, ask. What?
Reuven, we know.
Oh, so.
Because of the Maisa with Dina? Was that?
The fact is, if you take a look what happened over here, who were the ones that when the brothers come down to Mitzrayim, who are the people that are having the most tzoris in front of Yosef? Who is he giving the most aggravation? Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. Why? Because they were the ones who carried the ball with Mechiras Yosef. Reuven, he had a guilty, he says, throw him in the, don't kill him, throw him in the pit with the scorpions, or whatever it is, whether he saw it or not. Shimon Olevi, Vayisnak Luo Sol Amiso. Yehud Ma Betza, Yehuda Ma Betza, Kina Roga Sochinu, Vichisinu Westamo, Lechuven Imkarenu La Yishmiye Lev, Yodenu Altivo. Oh, that's wonderful. Tremendous. So what was the godless of Yehuda? Because Yehuda was always able to take responsibility and say, Chatosi Avisi Poshati. He was able to say it. David HaMelech was, Vayivarech David Es Hashem Li'enei Kol HaKol. He made a mistake when he lost his son from Bathsheba. He owned up to it. He understood that he had a problem. And he knew it. He always came clean. That's what God wants from us. He doesn't want us to be, you know, never sin. I mean, that's great. It's a wonderful thing to aspire to. Is it reality? Never. But the fact is, when you're faced with it, you don't. How many people are going to say, Vayomitzat kami? Many. Yehuda, you know, Onochi Ervenu Miyodit Vakshenu, and the whole speech, V'chatosli Lavi Kol Hayomim. He understands that he comes clean completely, and he wants to get that. So therefore, when does Yosef finally say ani ha'ol, ani Yosef achichem? When he sees Yehuda saying that I'm willing to give my life. By Yigash love Yehuda, we have all the mafarshim that tell us, was it a show of strength? Was he really begging? We discussed it last week in Shia, right? What was on Yehuda's mind? Did he see the hair sticking out of Binyamin's of Yehuda's thing? Or however you want to take it, a show of strength, he was doing this. He had all the medrash. There's so many different variations on the story. What do we know? But the fact is, Yehuda was going through a lot of tzaras over here. He was pouring out his heart, and he realized, you know, and Reuven said, I told you, Al Techtu Vayelad Velo Shematem Vagam Domo Hinei Nidrash. And they understood, and they were the older ones who really felt the brunt of it. And he wanted to see, are they doing tshuva? And when he sees that Yehuda means business, and that Onochi Ervenu, he says basically, listen, you do what you want, Yosef, but we're not going home without Binyamin. When he took Shimon, what happened? Did Yehuda say to Yosef at that point, you're taking my our brother? He went home without him. I mean, so listen, so I'm gone. Yosef is thinking to himself, they think probably I'm dead. They don't know what happened to me. And now I take Shimon from them and there's no reaction. Hey, they go home. Okay. So this is not going to sit well. Vayaker, what do you call it? When it says Vayiskores Achalomos, it doesn't just mean that he remembered his dream at that point in time. He remembered the dream. He was starting to put things in context, and he was starting to think and process the information that this was probably, he's starting to put two and two together, just like I'm trying to today. He's trying to process the information, and therefore that's what's going on. He's processing the information, and he sees that he's putting the dream in context and seeing that this is part of a grand plan probably, and that's what it is. This is the Yod HaGdolah that Yosef sees, and he wants to make them understand. And so he says, let me see, am I going to take, Yaakov doesn't come. Yosef thought perhaps that Binyamin would come down, but not bring him. The Abarbanel makes a very interesting point in saying, why didn't the brothers, if they thought that Paro was not Yosef, obviously, why didn't they just take somebody else? Just bring down another person.
Because Yosef could have pulled out somebody off the Rabban. He would have taken somebody off the street, right? He takes Shimon out and he says, tell me, who is this man?
And okay, no, I understand, but they didn't want to take a chance. They understand that. But you see, they know that Yosef is, what's scaring them really here? Yosef is acting like a bipolar. Yosef is acting bipolar. Well, he says that's a Kimani Yorei. He makes 1 minute he's a crazy man. He's saying these things to them, Kikeinim Atem, and 1 minute he brings them to the table to eat, and then one day he's like this, Nimtzo Hagovia Biodo, Chas V'Chalila, you shouldn't be all Avadim, as we said, and then 1 minute he's blowing hot and cold, left and right. He's doing 1 minute this way, 1 minute this way, and he's keeping them, you know, off their feet. He's just making them wonder, who is this person? They're really flummoxed. Now, the only problem that I had that I really don't have an answer is if all the time the people didn't know ki amelitz beino sam, if we're saying vayigash elav Yehuda, and he whispered in his ear not to embarrass Yosef to say that, listen, I just want to tell you, see how close we are? You should know that as close as I am, you may get me, but, you know, like the sheriff facing down the posse, you're gone. You're the first bullet is yours. So how could he be whispering in his ear if he doesn't think that Yosef understands Hebrew, or is Yehuda speaking Arabic? Is he speaking Egyptian? Whatever it is, if he got that close. I don't see anybody give an answer to that, but that's, you know.
You can tell from his attitude.
All right, but you want to say, at this point, it's very important to understand why you have interpreters who, as you see, a lot of times, when you misinterpret context, you can't do the words. When you see, you know, when you see a menu in Israel trying to translate, you know, beef as bakar on the menu, you know that something is wrong. And I just saw my sister-in-law who teaches English. She is in Israel. She sends all these things that on menus in Israel that are ridiculous. So you want to, we saw once on a restaurant here in on the east side, I looked at it, was reading the menu, and I couldn't understand one thing on the bottom there, and it had it in English. It said S-A-I-O-D-E-R. And Rivki was looking at me and saying, what does that mean? As I was trying to figure it out. It took me a while. It was side order. Side order. All right? So that's what it was. And the Meal Mart store on Avenue M had one time, for weeks, I was passing by after I stopped working there. Probably. And there was a sign in the window, Bucked Chicken, B-U-C-K-E-D, with a price on it. And I was thinking, is there something about this, a way you prepare it that I never heard about it? And I'm passing it every day on the way home because I had to go in business-wise over there. And all of a sudden, I was standing waiting at the light for on Ocean Avenue to change. And I looked at my wife and I said, I got it! Bucket of chicken! And I parked the car, went over, and I said, Shmuel, you meant bucket? That's not the way. It was a huge sign. All right? So these are the things that happen. It's very important to understand every little nuance. I mean, you've seen all of these things. So that's the way it is. I mean, I could tell you a lot of stories like that. We had the Meal Mart store on Avenue M called me up one more in Manhattan, called me up and said they're making fun of me. I got to ask you a question. And there's one of my customers is from, he's a professor in Columbia, an English professor. And he's always correcting me. And he came in this morning and he's laughing. And the sign I had over there, turkey ties. And he was laughing at me. He said, how do you spell ties? I said, how did you spell it? He said, T-I-E-S, turkey ties. So that was it. So I said, no, I don't understand. I said, that's English, what are you gonna do? That's, so, yeah.
Can I just ask you?
Go ahead, Ed.
When Yosef is first sold, it says that he was sold to the Ishmaelim.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have to read the pasuk. It's not. It's if you go back to the pasuk. But go ahead, ask the question,
the
and
question
then I'll
is,
get to you.
Does Yishmael have anything to do with this?
Why? Well, Yishmael's not alive anymore.
I know, but the fact that Terry tells us it was B'nai Yishmael that bought him originally, and then said also Midjan. So I'm just curious. I mean, I never saw anybody speak about that, but I'm just curious.
Well, because the idea was that they wanted to sell him to the Yishmaelim, but they ended up not doing it.
But what happened in the end? What does the next pasuk say? Vayavru anoshim midyonim socharim vayimshachu vahuz vayimshachu.
No, I understand that.
Yeah.
My question
why the symbolism? No, just that was the reality.
I'm just curious if Yishmael had...
They were obviously in a particular place where, and by the way, he says, the Barbanel says, they weren't in Shechem when this whole thing didn't happen in Shechem. They wouldn't go to Shechem. They went nearby in the area of Shechem. It's like saying you live in New York City, but you live, you know, in the outskirts. They weren't in Shechem.
But the Malos and Doisen.
Yeah, right. Then they went elsewhere. You know, whereas they went, they wouldn't, they weren't ever in Shechem, you know, for the sheep. That wasn't where they go. The one other thing about filling a little bit of time. At one point in time, when he gives the bracha to Yisachar Chamor Gorem, Roveis Ben Amishbusayim, Vayar Menucha Kitov. While Rabbi Alpert makes a point of saying, what is the difference, Vayar Menucha Kitov? When we think of Vayichi Yaakov B'Yeretz Mitzrayim and things like that, there's a difference, there's different kinds of rest. You could have, you're at work, you have a coffee break, 15 minutes. All right, you're not really relaxed. You could have a lunch break, maybe it's a half hour or an hour, depending on where you work. Mm-hmm. You go home at the end of the day where you sleep the whole night. You're a student in school and you're off for the summer. You have off for 2 months. It's a different relaxation. There's a different relaxation when you retire, when you know you've now finished your work life and you have put away enough in your nest egg, so to speak, that you don't have to worry about your finances. It's a different level of relaxation. Vayar menucha ki tov is at how, what does he see in the future? Menucha is what kind of a rest are we talking about? He puts a label on different levels of rest that we have. Menucha is menucha v'simcha or la'yehudim. When do we use menucha? When it's truly rest. When we know the, you know, my mother-in-law likes to say something that my father-in-law, I never heard him say it, but he always used to say, if the end is supposed, the end is good. If it's not good, it's not the end. The idea is that's not on a personal level, but that is, I was telling her, the reality is not everybody seemingly had a good end, so to speak. But you mentioned a couple of weeks ago the difference, I take notes. I mean, it's important to remember the difference between bitachon and emuna. It was a real good lesson in terms of, you know, do you really believe or do you really believe it? In other words, the people who went through Nebuch, you know, who died with, you know, people have emuna, but when they're faced with the end, do they want? As I brought in that time, the final tzava of one of my wife's grandfathers, when they smuggled it, they didn't find it until my father-in-law's brother died and they found it in his wallet. He survived the war and was run over by a streetcar in Eretz Yisrael after the war, in Yerushalayim, it's in Tel Aviv rather. It was like, you know, this is what he made it through the war for. And in his wallet, they found his last tzava. And what he did was, and it was his yard site recently, that he said, you know, he was hiding all the for years, for a couple of years, and then he got cabin fever and he had to go out to get food and they caught him. But while he was in prison, he wrote his last will and testament. And he wrote, you know, he was Miyushev Das, that he realized his mistake was when they first caught him, he started to deny he was a Jew, but of course, you can't deny it. They pulled down his pants and things like that, and they, you know, he was a Jew, and he was in prison there, and he knew that this was going to be, they were going to kill him Shabbos Chanukah. I told my mother-in-law, but if you read the Tzava, you see that he wrote afterwards, it's a little addendum, that he thought he was going to, it's not his, Shabbos Chanukah was not his yard site, that it was after, because he wrote on it afterwards, this is Ksav Yad, that here it is a few days later and I'm still alive and I don't know this, you know, I'm surprised, but of course he was killed a few days later, but you know, whatever it was. But nevertheless, he wrote that he only hopes for one thing in the end. He's dying and he's okay with it. He has emunah and the only thing that he wants, he hopes that he has children. He didn't know that his children will survive and that they'll grow up to be Shomer Torah Mitzvos. And that was his final wish. And he wrote it in the, it's a Hasidish guy from Europe there, and the Tzava was written in the shape of a mug and David. He wrote it, you know, that's the way it came out on the paper. He wrote it in a mug and David, the way he wrote it out. And it was published in a few svarim. They didn't publish it in the mug and David though. They wrote it out. The, you know, for the there's a B'nai Yisusko that has it in it, one edition, and also one other sefer from the Gerber Rebbe. These are for people that he saved, and of course he was my father-in-law was a master forger. That's what he learned to be in the. He was a clerk in Europe, and he made a lot of papers for various people. But anyhow, but these are the things. Do we have bitachon? Yaakov and Yosef were the epitome of bitachon. But as I've mentioned before, because three times Yosef says to his brothers at the end of the parsha, when the brothers, after the Yaakov is buried, they send, the Abarbanel says, it wasn't the brothers that came to him. Again, they sent a messenger to the brothers to say, we want to tell you, your father told us to tell you that Avicha Tzival if Nemo Soleimor Kosom Ruli Yosef Ono So Pesha Achecha V'chatosom Ki Ra'aga Malucha V'yatos Sono L'Pesha Avdeya Elokei Avicha. And then the Pasuk ends V'yef Ki Yosef B'dabra Me'lov. Why was he crying? Because he realized that they never got it. He thought, oh, after 17 years of understanding Ki L'michyo Shlochani Elokim L'fnechem, they never really believed it. He had the emunah, he had the bitachon, but his brothers were still lacking. They didn't get it. They still thought maybe that Yosef, now that our father is dead, that Yosef is going to
take revenge.
But what does Yabarbanel say? Why did they think that? Because the message that they did get is Viato Alteyotzvu. Three times, if you take a look in Vayigash and Vayachi, it says, V'yato al teyotzvu v'yal yichar b'yeinichem ki l'michyosh lochani. And three different times it says, V'yato. And he says, listen, go home and tell daddy I'm alive. Don't worry about it now. Not now. Listen, later, we'll talk about later. There's going to be a day where you're going to pay for it. But they didn't know when later was. Is he keeping them on their toes? Or he means it's a future punishment that goes to say, V'yato al teyotzvu. Don't worry about it now. You did a terrible thing. And when you do a terrible thing, like we mentioned many times, there's a missile launch. You pray for where it lands, as we see this week, right? To pray for where it lands. So this is what it's talking about. So they're nervous till the end. They're thinking now that Yaakov has now passed away. Maybe V'yato is achshav. Maybe it's now is the time that he was talking about. So they go and they send the messenger again. But he says, Anochi achal kel eschem v'yestabchem. And what was that message again? Just like at the beginning when God says to Yaakov, V'yichi Yaakov, v'yikrivu yemei Yisrael lamus. After Yosef says, Anochi achal kel eschem v'yestabchem, it says, V'yomus Yosef, b'meyov v'eseshonim. Oh, you think it's you that's doing it? You think you are sustaining your brothers? Gee, I thought it was me. I thought it was me, God, playing a role here. You're discounting my intervention over here, that this is not down to me. You are the savior. You made a mistake. You've been king too long, and you've been king now for how many years?
80.
80 years. Could you imagine? And that's why Egyptologists start to say, although there's a machlokas here, like with anything, that since what did they, Yosef instituted Bris Mila for all Egyptians, he also instituted the thought process of, and it says, if you read, this is secular, that Egypt was for a long time, until Vayokom Melech Chadosh on the calendar, it stems with the time, that Egypt was a country of monotheism for a while, history-wise. If you read books that have nothing to do with Yiddishkeit, I have a couple of books that I bought at a library when I went to read the King Tut exhibit, and I bought a couple of books on Egyptology, and it talks about they went through a period of time, did the backdating on the, you know, the BCEs, and it roughly comes out within that time frame that he was, and Vayakom Melech Chadosh is also, guess who was alive at that time? King Tut was in that time frame that he was only a king for a short time, and it actually works out dating-wise that it was in that time frame. All these things are very interesting, but you have to take everything into account. There's Emunah and Bitachon. Yosef had it. The brothers were still wondering. They were worried for their own safety, and they thought maybe it's today, it's tomorrow, it's the next day. They didn't know. They were looking over their shoulder. And that's why the end of Bishalach was the final Vayar Menucha Kitov. When they finally left Mitzrayim and they finally reached the point of Vayar Yisrael Es Hayara Agdola and Sus Varoch Roma Vayam, that was the first time that they actually had Vayar Menucha Kitov, because they saw that all the events up to this time in history, the last 500 years, were all leading to this point, that the Bris Bein Absarim that Yaakov was given was now coming to fruition 100%. They walked away with the Bezus of Mitzrayim, and that could only be affected if they had to go through the Yam Suf and Paro, because there's no feeling of relaxation. If the Egyptian army was still alive, had never followed them at all, they're in the Midbar, they're looking over their shoulder. They're thinking, is it today? Is it tomorrow? V'yato, so, you know, God is up. But they're always worried about maybe something is going to happen. When they saw that the Egyptian army, the best of the best, was Sus Varochbo Roma Vayom and spit out all these things. It was obviously a nace beyond imagination, the seas splitting and everything happening the way it is. Everybody saw the events of the last whatever years they were alive for come to fruition, and what the Nevuah, the Bris Bein Absarim, what it actually meant. And that, at that point in time, they had their bitachon and the emunah complete, which is why the Egel leaves such a bitter taste, and why the Nesivos says that God thought that people who reach this level, they've seen everything, the Yorah Gdola, and they understand it so completely, are now thinking, I could turn off the switch. What is the switch? What is going on in your brain when you have a guilty conscience? I want to sleep late. I don't want to go to shul. I want to do this, or I don't want to do this. And God is, you know, is the Yetzer Hara, the Yetzer Tov. It's a switch that goes on in our heads that God has there, he says. And he figured with Bnei Yisrael, and he does this on Elisha ben Avuya, he says it. Somebody who reaches a certain level of godless, he thought maybe I could turn off the switch. And he turned off the switch. We could never turn off the switch. That guilty conscience is there to keep us on the straight and narrow. Because that's what Yaakov is trying to tell Bnei Yisrael, and that's what Yosef is trying to tell them. You just Vayefk Yosef v'dabra me'lov. He cries because he said, these last years, all these years, you still don't get it. And I need you to get it if you're going to survive in Golis. And we almost didn't survive. All right, I have.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry. I lost my voice. Try to arrange
Shiurim, but it's too short notice.